You're broken down and tired of living life on a merry-go-round. And you can't find a fighter, but I see it in you, so we gon' walk it out. Move mountains.
Hello, everyone, and thank you for tuning in to WOLB 1010 AM Talk Radio. This is Carol Mileta of Team Radio Baltimore, bringing you another edition of Parenting 411, where we share information parents need from sources they can trust. It looks like another soggy day on tap for much of the DMV today and for most of the week, I'm sorry to say. But we're not going to let a little rain dampen our spirits here at the studio. We've got a great discussion for you today about what parenting looks like when your teens head off to college. This topic seems timely as across the nation, parents participated in the age-old ritual of move-in day over the last couple of weeks. I know I did for two sons, and I have certainly enjoyed seeing all of the social media posts of my friends who were doing the same. There was so much stress about buying all the right things, outfitting the room to make it look like a cool place to be, and a little bit like home. Then, of course, were the tears. I know I shed a few. And while we know this is a part of life, how crazy is it that we won't see those adorable faces every day? Another thing that makes it hard to get used to this is the fact that we will no longer have as much say over how they're conducting their lives day to day. They're in charge now. Without a doubt, technology has changed the landscape of the relationship between parents and their college students. Consequently, parents are enmeshed in situations that wouldn't have concerned parents in previous generations to the same degree, if at all. Choosing college majors and career paths, interactions with professors, interpersonal relationships with friends, roommates, and significant others, as well as interactions and negotiations with potential employers, and the list goes on. To help me get a hold of myself and to satisfy my professional curiosity about these trends, I have been reading the book, The iConnected Parent, Staying Close to Your Kids in College and Beyond While Letting Them Grow Up by Dr. Barbara Hofer and Abigail Sullivan Moore. According to a survey conducted by these authors, the average number of times that families communicated with their college students was about 13.2 times a week. Does that sound like a lot to you? If so, is there a downside? Well, they and others who have looked at this issue find that our emerging adults can lose a lot with this level of engagement. They're missed opportunities to develop and practice good problem-solving skills and to receive solid instruction and guidance from professors and other college staff, for starters. Next, we can't discount the potential loss of respect and regard from professors. Perhaps they will think twice about writing references for internships or jobs if students can't handle their own business. And finally, there are missed opportunities to show you, and more importantly, themselves, that they are competent and capable of handling life's challenges. Here to talk with me today about staying connected while cutting the cord are two professionals and two first-rate mamas who know something about navigating this pivotal moment. First, we'll hear from Dr. Linda McGee, a clinical psychologist and head of McGee & Associates in Chevy Chase, Maryland. Dr. McGee helps children and young adults overcome life's challenging moments and manage transitions. Next, we'll hear from Barbara Owens, an educator, an author, and grief counselor. Welcome, Linda.
Welcome. Carol, how are you?
I'm doing fine. Thank you so much for joining me today. So why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, both professionally and personally?
Okay. I am a clinical psychologist, and I specialize in the separation. My client base is made up about 40% of kids who are exiting high school and or in some stages of college or even getting out of college. And I'm the mother of one rising sophomore in college.
Okay. Now, how are you feeling right now with your son starting another year of college?
Well, you know, I was talking to some friends about this, and for some reason, this feels maybe even a little bit more emotional than last year. And I think, well, a couple of the reasons for that is that, you know, what you touched on earlier, when you're sending them off for the first time, you have so many to-do things. You have to buy so many things. You have to get them. You have to handle all the logistics. That I don't know if I gave myself enough time to process emotionally last year.
Mm.
And then also, I also felt like the press of feeling a certain way because everyone talks about, you know, the gut-wrenching nature of letting go.
Mm-hmm.
But, I also had some other feelings last year and this year where it's a little bit of freedom involved with them going off to school. And so sometimes the feelings, I feel like that we're sort of directed to feel a certain way and don't really permit ourselves to feel other ways.
Okay. Yeah, I guess I could kind of understand that, what you're saying. Let's hear from Barbara. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself professionally as well as personally?
Hi, good afternoon, Carol and Linda, and thank you, Carol, for having me on your show.
Thank you.
I am a seasoned teacher, 23 years, in the classroom. I've taught fourth grade, second grade, K-2, and some years of middle school, but my focus is always early childhood. I developed a lot of understanding of even parenting differently through my job because I was dealing with other people's children. I am the mom of three, my oldest being 28, my middle 25, and my youngest college student is 20. I'm a wife of 30 years, and it's been quite a journey, graduating to and having a rising junior in our family.
Mm-hmm. Now, go ahead.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to ask you, having already seen two children graduate from college, are you a little more relaxed now?
I can say that I am a bit more relaxed, Carol, but I got to tell you honestly, it's still hard. At the end of the summer, when my son has to leave to go back to his campus, I cried just like I cried with the first one. And the difference is we're not driving him back. My youngest son went the furthest away. He's in California, and I'm in D.C. My other children were at campuses that you could drive and drop them off. So I would cry on the drive. Now I have to cry at the airport.
Wow. And so what's their reaction when they're seeing you crying as they're leaving?
You know, I think that has been also a constant. They go, oh, here comes the tears. I know, Mom. I'm going to love and miss you, too.
Uh-huh.
It's great that they are understanding and they just allow me to just to be their mom. But my children have, across the board, have been pretty strong about the whole process.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good to hear. So let me ask you both. I'll ask Linda first. What kind of game plan did you set up beforehand around communication with your son while he was away in college?
So I'm going to give you the game plan, and if you don't mind, I'll give you how it works.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. Oftentimes the twain do not meet. I guess me and my husband's game plan were to give him some space, to be able to find his way on his own. But we were supportive. We attended events. But I try to find ways to not apparently hover. So when I was communicating with him, even though he might have seen through it there sometimes, I try to communicate with him about things that came up naturally and events and things that we interest areas that he had and things like that. So it wouldn't be like so obvious that, hey, I'm checking in, or hey, I want proof of life, or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
How it worked, I think it worked fairly well.
Hmm.
I will say that I wish that I would have had a more formalized communication
mm-hmm.
with him about the communications plan.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I really missed face-to-face
mm-hmm.
contact, so I probably would have had more of a plan to do more FaceTiming and even over the phone, like just seeing him.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And maybe I think with the first semester, maybe like the being a little bit more laid back is not always the best.
Oh, okay.
But my overall comments are about my experience in the book is that it comes down to a matter of degree, right? How involved are you? It depends on the degree that which you're involved. It's hard to generalize any of this advice,
mm-hmm.
and it's very, very individual. Right?
Mm-hmm.
It depends on where your child is in the continuum. So, like, let's say you take this advice. I know we're going to get to this later, and your kid may not be at the point where they can do this. Everything has to occur in stages.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, you have to really be mindful of the child that's in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, figure out how to communicate based on the kid in front of you.
I think that makes a lot of sense. That it's not only where the child is developmentally, but it also is in the context of the relationship that you all already have.
Right.
Because
right.
I think that a change in that way, in terms of the level of interest and concern that you have in their life, whether there's a lot or there's a little, and then all of a sudden you do the opposite when they go to college, could
right.
probably be pretty jarring for them.
Right,
so,
and I hear mm-hmm. people say that, well, he's on his own now, and I'm like, well, what happened before?
Right, right.
You know, a kid who was dependent on you for everything can't just go off and be autonomous.
Exactly. Yep. I agree with that. What would you say about that, Barbara? How did you all set up a game plan ahead of time?
Carol, I have to be very authentic about how the game plan looked. I do not believe there was a...
Hello?
Uh-oh.
Looks like I don't... I can't hear you right now, Barbara. I don't know. Barbara?
I think she may be off, Carol.
Okay. Well, hopefully she'll come back around.
The funny thing is, mm-hmm. Carol, I'm going to turn the tables on you and ask you, because we are both being very honest about not necessarily having a formal plan.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
What about you?
Right. And we do. Yes, we do. We have two times a week. Two times a week for sure. And then we do at least one FaceTime. And then they both know that should anything come up other times, they're certainly welcome to call. And just occasionally just sending a text, like, hope you're having a great day, that
right.
sort of thing. And interestingly enough, by... you know, kind of having a game plan and not bothering them too much. I mean, the first few days I was like, okay, we're, you know, calling and texting a little bit too much. But I found that by doing that and respecting what we talked about, they sometimes they voluntarily called. I was just thinking about you, Mom, and
right.
just calling because, you know, for a moment I was like, okay, something up? What's going on? He's like, no, I just wanted to. Just wanted to talk, and so that was very pleasant. So far, the game plan, so to speak, is working. So, Barbara, you were going to say something about your game plan.
Yes. Hi. We got disconnected.
Awesome.
So the experience was very organic for my husband and I when we sent our children off to school. We did not have a formal game plan. When I went to college, I was the first in my family, and the same for my husband.
Mm.
So I feel like it was organic in that we were learning as kind of as you go, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then with this first child off to college, I thought I'd love to call her every day. But she was pretty clear. Unless she was on Selma's campus, Mom, don't call me every day. And mm-hmm. so that kind of morphed into, I think, what other parents are experiencing, that Sunday afternoon call while she's doing her laundry and wrapping up homework or starting homework for the weekend, whatever the case was.
Mm-hmm.
We learned quickly from my oldest child that keeping open communication while she was living on the campus was what was important. Mm-hmm. So there was not a formal game plan. And mm-hmm. I like what you said earlier. We had great communication and understanding before my daughter left.
Mm-hmm.
So that was just a continuum.
Mm-hmm,
she could call any time. And since my oldest child, I'm sure I've changed quite a bit, but one of the comments that we made with our children, even early on in Montessori, when you don't see me, where am I? And the response was always the same, in my heart. So that was kind of like our final comment, leaving the campus,
mm-hmm.
but they always knew that you can always call.
Mm-hmm,
so, mm-hmm. By the time my daughter went to college, there was FaceTime,
mm-hmm.
but we didn't FaceTime every day.
Oh gosh, not every day. I wouldn't be able to.
No,
I wouldn't be able to do that.
It was too much.
Mm-hmm.
Too much.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but just open and honest communication.
Mm-hmm. Now, how does your level of engagement involvement in your college students' life compare to that of your parents, Linda?
Oh, you know, of course, night and day. You know, back in those days, you had to call, you had to pay for a call.
True.
The individual call, and the weekends were cheaper. So I believe that I checked in once a day. And I, you know, from when I was in high school or even middle school or grade school on, no academic involvement whatsoever.
Now, let me ask you, did you say that you checked in once a day or did you mean once a week?
No, I meant once a week.
Oh, okay.
Checked in on Sundays. Most uh-huh. weeks, mm-hmm. some weeks, not even that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But, you know, I had to fend for myself. I wasn't the first one to go to college, but I was the first one to go away very far for college.
Okay, okay.
And I had to fend for myself
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and figure out and problem solve. And
mm-hmm.
So, you know, the involvement that I have with my own son, I don't have academic involvement other than are you checking with your advisor so you can graduate on time?
Right.
But I have no academic, connection.
Uh-huh.
I do support a little bit in helping him, like with things such as, like, you know, if I see an internship notification or
mm-hmm.
something like that, I might forward that.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, I don't, you know, it's a very different kind of relationship, and it's a different time.
Right.
You know, the authors of the book, you know, laid out some factors as to why this is different.
Right.
And, you know, what it was like when we were growing up. You know, I mean, it's a whole different premise. And one of the things that I found challenging about the book
mm-hmm.
is the sort of thought that it's, that this whole issue stems from over communication.
Oh, absolutely.
And sometimes I think that technology is like is sort of like supporting the over parenting or the degree of parenting that we're doing, not necessarily that the over communication is the cause.
Right, right.
And there, parenting.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it absolutely is facilitating, and it was interesting.
Right.
Speaking of the book, one of their observations from their research was that they found that, and I'm quoting here, students whose parents still manage their academic lives lag behind their friends in becoming independent, separating from family, and developing their study skills. I mean, there's some academic costs to this over-involvement, let alone the development of, you know, their social and emotional development,
right,
as well.
Developmentally, the academic
mm-hmm.
involvement.
Mm-hmm.
And also what's lately been coming up to me with me within my clients is this issue of, like, the electronic tracking.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Of, you know, of the just the whereabouts.
Okay.
Of
okay.
the child.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And the electronic monitoring, you know, like looking on the grade reports.
Right, right.
From my parents. Those are the issues that are coming up
mm-hmm.
as well as, you know, just involvement, proofing papers, and.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I was surprised by that. And, you know, I would agree with you, too, that my level of engagement and involvement with my college students, I mean, of course, we're just starting, but it is very different because I checked in at home on Wednesdays and Sundays, and the phone was out in the hallway. And I believe my second year we did have our phone in the room, but I still kind of talked on those days. And to be honest, that held true when I moved into my first apartment and moved 2 hours away. That's just the way it was. I could call any other time if there was an emergency, but that's the way it was. And I just figured out things on my own. And it sounds like Barbara alluded to that as well with her own college experience. So,
right.
Mm-hmm. So Barbara, what do you think? Do you find advanced technology to be a blessing or a curse in maintaining your relationship with your college student and young adults?
I find it to be a blessing.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think we have a clear understanding. One of the things that I like most about the relationship is that we trust our kids.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so that is, you know, we build from a place of trust. But the trust didn't start when our children went off to college, and not even when my youngest son went off to college. What I like about the book, one of the researchers said, she talked about how it was very important for her as she watched the students come in and they were learning how to study, learning how to be on campus, and she realized that so many of her students were so unprepared because the parents were overly involved during high school.
Mm-hmm.
We had to make some decisions during my children's high school years that we were not going to be overly involved, but that we would be involved parents.
Mm-hmm.
My situation with my first two children were interesting because my older children, before going off to college, were both in a boarding school program.
Mm-hmm.
And it was considered partial boarding because they could come home on the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
But with my youngest son, he, being the social butterfly that he was,
mm-hmm.
and that he is, he traveled a lot. He connected with people in various groups and not just one specific group on campus.
Mm-hmm.
And so he was involved in a lot of things. It wasn't just sports. It wasn't just band. But he found himself involved in many areas.
Mm-hmm.
And so I couldn't overparent him and allow him to fill his skin in his junior and senior year of high school. And the high school counselors were clear about that. Mark, this is Matthew's journey,
mm-hmm.
and you have to let him walk it. And so that was helpful,
mm-hmm.
having the children in the boarding school program and then just trusting what we put in our kids.
Yes.
Very, very, very different from the relationship with my parents. My parents were hands-off because they were of the generation when you graduate high school, you're now an adult.
Mm-hmm.
And like you, Carol, the phones were in the hallways.
Mm-hmm.
So there were no personal calls. There were no cell phones on campus.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't have those luxuries. So we called home on Sunday,
mm-hmm.
Like every other student in the building.
Right. And I want to remind our listeners, you're listening to Parenting 411 on WOLB 1010 AM. And you're listening to Dr. Linda McGee of McGee & Associates and Barbara Owens, author, educator, and grief counselor. So you all touched on something that's very important, and that is that you can't start to build trust when they're heading out the door to college. You can't cultivate these habits, these problem-solving skills the month before they're leaving for college. And this ties in with an article that I just read, and I'm going to be posting it to my social media. It was in the Post a couple of days ago, and it's talking about how the idea that middle school is like a dress rehearsal for life, And so this article is written by a middle school teacher that's talking about that. And he talked about some of the things that he decided to do with his last child as his last child began middle school. He had had more children, but he really wanted to kind of change things for this last child. And so a couple of things that he talked about, he said he wasn't going to intervene. It was going to help him learn how to resolve problems on his own, certainly be a sounding board or act as a consultant, but let him really do the work. Also try to help him to have some perspective on the challenges that he's facing, certainly show some empathy for the situation that his son might be in, but also help him to know that this can pass. He has the skills and can get work through the situation, and to be encouraged by that. And also another important point he made was that he was going to focus on effort and not outcomes, particularly with things like grades. Like, he really felt that it was very important for his child to learn how to work hard and push through the challenges, because at the end of that, the yield is habits and attitudes and attributes that would really carry him later in life in terms of managing relationships, solving problems, and all of that. And then also to help him learn how to have empathy for other people, to imagine what other people are thinking and feeling, not just complaining about how things are going for him. And then finally, just making time to enjoy each other, to laugh together, and to not let everything be about telling him what to do, when to do it, and all of that, but just to really, enjoy each other and build some memories. And so all of that, really needs to happen before our children leave us. And even the summer before, obviously do what you can while you can, but it's great if you can build a foundation earlier. And we'll talk a little bit. I do want to make sure that I give some tips to parents of younger children as well. And we'll get to that a little later. But I want to ask Linda, what kinds of things, when you're communicating, what kinds of things are you talking about? I don't mean specific anecdotes, but the subject matter, the topics, what kinds of things are you engaging with when you are talking with your son while he's away at college?
Sometimes about just for example, what kinds of things should you join this year, when you should apply to go into your specialty program. But what I've been trying to do is not just to focus on the content, but to focus on the process, right? To do a lot more listening. And when there are some things I ask him, and I work with parents on the same issue, is to ask your child, what do you think, instead of offering, there was an example in the book about just for example, something to wear to a certain setting, right? And what do you think? Well, and then sort of helping them kind of come to the solution without you necessarily providing the solution. Who's sponsoring it? Well, a company is sponsoring it. Where are they sponsoring it? In a conference room. So what do you think?
Right? Exactly.
Well, the kid will say, that's kind of more like a formal interview and less like a casual event. Yeah, I think you're on the right track. And if you do need to sort of insert more, you can say, have you considered blank, have you considered it? So it's it's how the book talks about, it's the language,
right?
It's a respectful, you are a burgeoning adult, and I think you can get to this solution.
I don't know about you, but I was very surprised at the parents getting involved in social interactions and things with the significant other. And
I hear from university people that say they get a lot of calls about waking their children. Will the university people wake their children up?
Oh, wow. Well, see, that was just foreign to me. I can remember I had situations where my roommate was keeping me out of the room, because, you know, so that she could entertain. I had somebody steal something from me. I had a significant other. But I didn't, aside from my mother knowing that, you know, I was dating someone or whatever, she didn't get in. I didn't get her involved in any of the mechanics or anything of the relationship or anything like that. And like, I didn't even tell her anything about when somebody stole something from me. I did not tell her about the roommate either.
Right. You figured it out. You figured
right.
your pain and you figured it out. But I want to go back to something that you said, you and Barbara said, that I think is really, really key here,
mm-hmm.
is that, you know, we want our kids to be good problem solvers.
Exactly.
But we don't want them to have any problems.
Right.
So we want to step in and we want to create solutions, but we don't let them fail. And it's really, I'm speaking about this empathetically,
mm-hmm.
because this is a very hard thing, right? Because you're letting go,
mm-hmm.
and you're involved in the emotional process that underlie you letting go of your child.
Mm-hmm.
But on the flip side is as you're letting go, you're helping this person build the confidence to go out there and be a successful, autonomous, independent, caring individual.
Right.
So, you know, sometimes we focus on the former to
mm-hmm.
the detriment of the latter.
Mm-hmm.
Like we get so involved in our own emotional,
mm-hmm.
You know, and I want to go with one more point that you made, Carol, was about the middle school.
Mm-hmm.
I have more experience in schools working at the middle school level than any level.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that I found out through research was that kids make a lot of lifelong decisions in middle school.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
A lot of kids figure out what they want to do. They listen to other people. They figure out what kind of colleges they want to look at. They figure that out way younger than you would anticipate.
Right.
So mm-hmm. if they're not building the commiserate autonomous skills, even as younger than that, in grade school.
Oh, absolutely.
Then they're not going to be ready. And so
right.
one of the things that this over-parenting does and is via, you know, telecommunications or other means,
mm-hmm.
is that it delays them from growing up. And,
yes.
And it doesn't produce a child that's confident. Because if you provide a solution, the flip side of that is that the child internalizes that you don't believe that they can come up with their own solution.
Right. Mm. Right. Absolutely. And yeah, we talked about that too earlier in the show, where the researchers said that was exactly what they were finding. And that's something I really tried to build very early on in elementary school and things like that. And I mean, I'm surprised. I mean, I do have friends that communicate with their college students. I mean, and the things that, well, I mean, and I even noticed it in high school too, because I mean, my thing is, I mean, I was glad certainly for emergencies and things like that my children had cell phones and things like that. And of course, unfortunately, we've seen in the news where it was very valuable in some situations where teens have used their telephones in the, when there was very real dangerous situations happening. But to text about what some people are doing or wearing or whatever, I mean, I've like seen that. And I'm like, you know, I just encourage my children to, you know, hold on to that. And that gave us something to talk about when they got home. And really, what happened too is they ended up only talking about the important stuff. By the time they got home, they figured out that it didn't matter who was doing what, who was dating, whatever. But it did matter what was going on in their class or something with their teacher, an interaction that they had with their teacher or some guidance they received from their counselor. That they might want to share with me. So it just kind of gives your child an opportunity to decide what's important too, and that's a skill, you know, to learn what's the big deal, what's important. Barbara, were you going to say something?
Yes, I was. One of the things that we talked about, and I don't think this has been mentioned, but I just want to point out is that my husband and I had this talk with our children even before they went to college that, you know, those college loans will be in your name.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were very clear before leaving, there's a process and the loans will be in your name. The alternative is to work hard, do your very best, and to receive scholarship, apply for scholarship.
Mm-hmm.
So we would always have the conversation about the importance of taking the extra step, doing a little bit more research, looking for scholarship, even apply for some scholarship that you do not think that you're eligible for, and who knows, you may still receive that scholarship. And we learned this through our first child.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she was very motivated. She worked really, really hard. The first year,
mm-hmm.
there was some loans, and then the next few years, she was making excellent grades, so the scholarships were pouring in. It made a difference.
Mm-hmm.
And so we didn't change the conversation with the third child, who's now in college.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we remind him during our conversations is that you're now doing this for you. You're not making grades for mom and dad. That stopped in middle school. You're doing this because you want to do well for yourself. So my son is very focused
mm-hmm.
because he has set some goals. They are not goals that we set for him. They're goals that he set for himself.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that he'll reach the goal is to put his best effort forward in the classroom. Now, granted, he's having fun. He's doing what college kids do. But at the end of the day, he's buckling down because if the loan is in his name, every grade weighs the same
mm-hmm.
financially.
Mm-hmm.
And what you're saying is really true, Barbara, but I just think that even if you want to help the child set goals in college or you have an expectation that they will do well, it's how you convey that.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
It can't just be only your goal and you're dragging a completely unwilling child.
Right. And I agree.
And we definitely have those open conversations about the goals that they were setting
mm-hmm.
That are being set now for my youngest son.
Mm-hmm.
But we also know that, like, the difficulty that he will face while on campus or any discouragement that he might experience
mm-hmm.
Isn't going to be a detriment. Right. It's not a danger sign. It is how you frame it. And it is the open and honest communication that
mm-hmm.
has helped him.
Right. And even, you know, as you did talk about the cost of college and the student loans and things like that, you're just kind of, it sounds like to me, you were just kind of laying out the landscape. This is something you need to be thinking about as you decide what you're going to do, how well you're going to do, how much effort you're going to put in. And interestingly enough, the rising cost of college is just another reason that many parents think they are justified in dictating everything with their children. And in the book, it talked about how from 1982 to 2007, the price of college increased 439%.
Right.
And this was according to a report called Measuring Up 2008, a report by the National Center for Public Policy and Higher Education. And they're saying, too, that in contrast, family income only rose 147% during that same time frame.
Mm-hmm.
So some parents feel like the cost gives them license to dictate majors and all of that. And certainly it could be nice to have a discussion and things like that, but you also want to make sure that your student is interested in what they're studying and learning. And it's more likely that if they have that interest, they're going to have that passion and that motivation to find ways to be successful in whatever field that is and in whatever way success looks.
Do you think, Carol and Barbara, that mm-hmm. it's okay to have that conversation like that was listed in the book about your child wants a major like theater or dance or something like that? Do you think it's important to have a conversation with them about maybe adding on other majors for economic viability?
Oh, I do think it's a good idea to present options and present perspectives I definitely think that's a good way to do it, because you're just trying. I mean, look, you are a parent. You do have 30 years or something of experience on your child. So obviously, yeah, I mean, you should share that. But again, it's kind of like what both of you ladies talked about. It's how you frame it.
Right. And I think just that gift of perspective is what's so valuable.
Mm-hmm.
And I often use my own experience of majoring in one area, but not working in that area.
Okay.
So I had a great experience of majoring, you know, in one department, but then I went off to education.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That was not what I studied in
right.
undergrad. Mm-hmm. So I know that giving them that perspective is very important, and giving them those options and helping them to think through what you're studying, think through the 4 years of what you're going to do with what you're learning. Also, just staying open-ended, I have found, has been helpful in my relationship with my children. Being empathetic, Carol, I heard you say that, just
mm-hmm.
listening.
Mm-hmm.
And being empathetic and just kind of allowing them to kind of explore and spread these wings.
Mm-hmm.
But not being that parent that says, okay, here are the wings, and here are the skies, and this is how high you can fly, and this is where you have to go. But just staying open-ended has served as a blessing for us.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What were your thoughts, Linda?
I think sometimes, depending on the child, bumpers, you know, the ones that you see on the edge of the bowling alley,
mm-hmm,
they might be required if some of these children or some of these young people are going to college and they're not really prepared. So,
right.
like I said, your mileage may vary, and there might be a child that you might have to take a mid-look at their grades.
Oh, mm-hmm.
You know, if you have permission to do so. And especially early on, a lot of this advice centers around that we're actually talking about centers on kids as they're learning to fly,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And at the very beginning, I think the first year advice
mm-hmm.
is very, very different than your fourth year advice.
Mm-hmm.
Because,
right.
you know, I learned right. having a child who transferred
mm-hmm.
is that, you know, 40% of the kids don't start where they finish. Don't finish where they start.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So, you know, you have a lot of issues that come up initially, such as homesickness and
mm-hmm.
transfers and athletics
mm-hmm.
that, you know, other, you know, or mental illness, which I guess we'll touch on before we get off. But, you know, that children have various needs that are different. And initially getting them away is harder.
Right. Right. And you touched on an important point, too, about looking at the grades. And as you said, because they are 18 or older, it's now you have to get permission. And that's something that should be talked about. I hope anybody that's getting ready to send their child to school anytime soon have that conversation beforehand,
right.
Not once the child gets there and then.
Right.
You know.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of times you should exercise the FERPA the under the law.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if you're gonna do it, you need to like have that conversation before you go.
Mm-hmm.
But I strongly urge that parents, even though this is going to sound a little bit like overparenting, that they get the permission.
Oh, I agree.
Mm-hmm. Because you know, I just think I've seen situations where parents didn't have access until it was like too late.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of a kid even just being sick and not being
right.
able to withdraw them.
Right.
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 Yourself. And by that time you know, you could have withdrawn them and they have like a better academic situation than
mm-hmm.
if they just fail out.
Right.
You know?
And mm-hmm. And that's and it's yes, it's just kind of good to know where they are but not calling every other day or texting every other day. Are you ready?
Checking.
No, I'm saying. I mean, I'm saying every other week. Or, I mean, every
right.
week. What's going on there? What's going on there in economics? Or what's going on there? What's going on there in, you know, whatever math class they're in? Yes, absolutely not hovering, but, you know, again, having a general idea of how they're doing, how things are going.
But if you're spending, you know, like people are spending up to $30,000, $35,000 a semester.
Exactly. I agree.
On school.
Mm-hmm.
And I just really feel like that as a parent, if you want to go glance on there, if you have a suspicion or you don't think the child is, you know, necessarily giving you all of the facts.
That's right. That's right.
You should be able to go check. But that's not permission for you to go on every day, email the professor.
Right.
Right.
And otherwise teach your child, you know, as they're not, you know, that they're not an independent and functioning person.
Yes. So let's talk a little bit about, as I said, parents of younger children, and let's give them a little bit of perspective and all. So what parenting practices do you think help smooth your children's transition to college from when they were younger? What do you think you did that kind of laid the groundwork, Linda?
To try to have them fail.
Yes.
At things,
mm-hmm.
And not step in, and that's very, very hard for parents to do, and it was very, very hard for me to do personally.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, to also have him go and intervene on his own behalf, I would like provide a backstop. Like I would like send a teacher an email that says he's coming to talk to you about this.
Yep.
You know, but mm-hmm. I'm going to step back.
Mm-hmm.
And generally trying to nurture, listen, and to be a little bit more flexible,
mm-hmm.
because sometimes I think, you know, it's the tendency to have like one way that you would do it,
mm-hmm.
As opposed to like really trying to like listen to what the child's saying and maybe helping him to refine,
mm-hmm.
you know. And the last thing I would say is goal setting.
Yes.
Which sometimes it involves like a little nudge.
Mm-hmm.
Right. You know, especially sometimes with boys,
mm-hmm.
you know, ask what's your goals. And they'll say, well, I'm just going to get all B's.
Mm-hmm.
And you could say, well, have you considered like a slightly higher goal?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And if they say no, or if they fight you tooth and nail, that's one thing. But sometimes if you can nudge them a little bit
mm-hmm.
without taking over.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the subtlety and nuance that makes this so hard,
mm-hmm.
is that all of this, as I started off the conversation, is about degree.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
having that relationship, it can't start 2 minutes while you're on the road.
Right.
I had this joke, like we had these big discussions in the car from Evansville, Indiana to Ann Arbor, Michigan, but that should have taken place a long time ago when I went to college.
Right.
You can't have mm-hmm. that conversation then, right?
Right.
You need to start having it in the fourth grade,
right?
The third grade. So if you have that kind of relationship, then some of these issues that we're talking about
mm-hmm.
are, I think, will be lessened because you have a child with greater skill set and greater confidence going into college.
Right.
As opposed to somebody you've done everything for, and then you realize while you're on your drive to Johns Hopkins, they don't have the skills.
Right. How about you, Barbara? You alluded to a couple of things. Was there anything else you'd like to mention that you think you did when they were younger that really helped make things run smoother as they got older?
I think one of the things that come to mind right away, specifically when you mentioned middle school,
mm-hmm.
is just helping my children to be disciplined
mm-hmm.
in their
mm-hmm.
behaviors when it came to school.
Mm.
So because I was a school teacher in New York City and we had a huge commute morning and afternoon, it was really important that my children had all of their things in a place. So
mm-hmm.
providing a space for them to study was always really important.
Mm-hmm.
Having blocked out time, this is our study time, that was really important.
Mm-hmm.
Until it just became a part of their practices.
Mm-hmm.
It did eventually grow to the place where I didn't have to say it
mm-hmm.
10 times. I only had to say it 8 times. You know?
Right.
Because it was a part of our practice, you know, to have the snack, to do our homework, you know, eating dinner about the same time every day. And just really being mindful of my and I know early on, you know, it's going to be really important that I get A's. Well, I had to later learn that doing their best was probably more important than it being, quote, unquote, an A.
Mm-hmm.
But just doing their very best. And I would constantly remind them, your best
is always good enough.
Mm-hmm.
You do your best, there is nothing better than that. So your best, whatever that best is, then that's what I want.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
I'm still saying that, you know, even to my youngest son, if you do your best, that's all we're asking, because that's all anybody can ask of you.
Right.
So
right.
He will often make a phone call home and say, you know, I got a B in my economics class, and that was the best that I could do. I studied so hard. I put in a lot of effort. So you're feeling good about it? I feel great about it, because that B weighs the same weight as an A when it's your best.
Right,
I think the things that we put into place was just trying to give them that confidence of just being authentic and being their best.
Right.
And that was from middle school on.
Right. And I would add, you know, we did all of those things that you all are talking about as well. And I also, that part that I talked about earlier about empathy, empathizing with their situation, the situation that they found themselves in, and trying to encourage that in others with something else. And then also, you know, adding to what you all were talking about was their social interactions, like having them role play situations, but both with their peers as well as with their teachers, and kind of stepping out of those situations. Like if they had conflicts with their friends or other students, I didn't pick up the phone to call their parents or whatever. And I didn't necessarily, I mean, there just wasn't a thing where I felt like they were in physical danger, but I certainly would have picked up the phone if I felt like that was the case. But instead, having them prepare to talk to the teacher about what they needed in terms of support or about what was going on. And as Linda said, giving the teacher a heads up that one of my sons would be coming to them to ask for a forum to sit down and address whatever situations there were. But it's just really wonderful when you can start that when they're young, because that also helps to build confidence, and it's also gives them muscle memory. I mean, they need to keep practicing these problem-solving skills over and over, these relationship skills over and over, so that they can just be much stronger and much more resilient later on when the stakes may be even higher. So
and you laid a foundation for them to come back to you when they need you.
Right.
You know, the book is really from an almost a negative connotation on parenting, but if you do a lot of the things that you two talked about, you laid a foundation for a healthy, you know, mom, I'm in this situation, what do you think? My mother is one of my greatest persons, even to this day, that once I have a dilemma or I have an immovable object, she's one that I really talk to the most.
I think that's great. And I also think, and I just want to echo you, Carol,
it's
just teaching our children advocacy, to advocate for themselves. And I see this now more so in my two older children, because we taught them to advocate for themselves. I see them advocating for themselves, but also advocating for others.
Yes.
Right.
Because that advocacy gave them the confidence, you know, as they got older to speak up when something just didn't feel right or just didn't feel good. And yes, thank you for saying that, Linda, they would come back to us. And we would get an opportunity to kind of go over, well, how did you handle it? And how did you feel? You know, at the end, do you feel like there's a resolve?
Right.
Just teaching them advocacy, even on the playground.
Yes.
We're seeing fruit of that labor now.
Right, right. Absolutely. So we have a very few minutes left. So I'll ask you ladies if you have anything coming up that you want to tell our listeners about. Any speaking engagements or just anything going on? Linda?
I will be speaking at the Fusion School on September 28th. The topic is anxiety, academic and otherwise, which is a huge issue that that we're facing now. It's become anxiety has become the number one mental health disorder, surpassing depression.
Mm-hmm.
And we're seeing it a lot with our young people, and I'm seeing it in my practice a lot. So I will be speaking there and various other places on that issue.
Okay. Okay.
In the fall.
Okay. And Barbara, anything that you want to share that you have coming up?
Yes. So I will be preparing for several weeks of grief coaching from November through December through the holiday, looking at holiday grief. So we'll be meeting on Sundays once a week, just to have the conversation about people's grief process and providing a place, a safe space for them to talk through that grief process.
That sounds good.
Yep, and that will be happening at Michigan Park Christian Church.
Oh, okay. That sounds really good. Yes.
Thank you for asking.
And so, and so I will be doing a talk. As many of you know, I also do workshops and classes with the Parent Encouragement Program in Kensington, Maryland. I'll be speaking on positive discipline at a conference on October 17th, and that will be happening at First Christian Church in Falls Church, Virginia. And it's presented by the Potomac Association of Cooperative Teachers. And then I will be doing another talk, and that's a little later in November, November 13th. And I'll be speaking on friendship and bullying. And so in the meantime, I also encourage listeners to visit my website, carolmuleta.com. That's CarolMuleta.com. And you will also be able to hear this show. If you were not able to hear the show in its entirety, then you can go to my website and pull up the show after, in a few days, you'll be able to do that. So anyway, I thank everybody for listening. And Linda and Barbara, as usual, I thank you for joining me. And I hope that I will be able to have you all on again this year.
Thank you so much,
Thank you, Carol. It's been a pleasure. We've enjoyed ourselves.
Okay. Thank you, ladies.
You're broken down and tired of living life on the merry-go-round. And you can't find a fighter, but I see it in you, so we're going to walk it out. Ooh.